So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
I feel like a peeping Tom, but Val Venus, he left his curtains open. Yeah, look who was up there with him, King. Woohoo! Ryan Shamrock, Ken Shamrock's sister.
Eye gouging, perfectly legal.
Only problem is, China, you're stepping up to the plate, but you're not carrying a bat.
Whoa.
There will be bloodshed. And it ain't gonna be mine.
Oh, that means it's gonna be the boss's.
As a matter of fact, you can't even draw a walk because you're not playing with any balls.
I can't believe it.
The use of chairs, tables, and assorted other furniture, quite acceptable.
Turn this mother out and say, Pippin ain't easy.
Kicks to the groin, quite frankly, would be appreciated.
We got two words for you.
That's a
so
death
put
sentence.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Austin.
Yes!
Hello, welcome to Review Away. It is John Pollock and the Silver Surfer Wei Ting.
What?
The Silver Surfer.
Why are you calling me that?
Because you're wearing a Silver Surfer shirt.
Oh, okay.
Tell us what we're doing today, Wei.
While I get my phone.
Today we are reviewing wrestling. We are a pro wrestling podcast where we look back at all the great moments of professional wrestling from years past. In this particular episode, we're traveling all the way back to the year 1999.
And we're traveling about 12 minutes driving from here to the Sky Dome.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So if you got the years out of the way, we're pretty much just, we could have done this live at the Sky Dome.
We could have. Yeah.
12 years, a lot longer than that, actually. This happened 15 years ago.
Yeah, man.
15 years ago.
15.
I was at this show.
Oh, you were?
This was the infamous show where I bought tickets from a scalper at an exorbitantly high ticket price, I thought of at the time. I paid $75.
I paid more than that.
Today, that doesn't sound like a crazy amount, but when I was, Jesus, 14 years old, yeah, and I spent that with my buddy, that was per ticket.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I just spent nearly $100 on a pro wrestling ticket.
Dude, you could have bought like a copy of Warzone, WCW.
I know, Warzone. I know. That was always my comparison. Anything above $75, it was like, that's a video game price.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, was I so excited. I bought it at a November house show because everyone just swarmed the box office when they announced Raw was coming to the Sky Dome. I thought they were going to sell the thing out. There was such a crazy lineup for tickets that I just went to the scalper and I was like, I got to get tickets.
You went right to the scalper? Like you went
the lineup, dude. You know where the gate is outside the Sky Dome, where that ticket booth is?
You lined up at the Sky Dome?
I went at intermission when tickets went on sale.
Oh, wow.
Everyone just swarmed it and I was like, I'm going to get 500 level seats. So I went to the scalper. He had floors.
Wait. There were already scalpers during the intermission?
Yeah, dude. They had already gotten tickets.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was nuts.
So instead of lining up, you just said, okay, I'm going to go to this guy.
I saw a guy. He's like, who wants Raw tickets? And I was like, I do. And I bought them. And
Did you try to negotiate?
Dude, I was 14. I probably like countered with a higher price. I had no business savvy.
I always bought tickets from scalpers too, but I would wait until the show usually started.
I know.
Like I'd miss a couple velocity matches, and by that point, scalpers would usually be tired and they would want to leave. I would do this for concerts too, and so I'd usually end up getting a cheaper price.
What was a real killer though was I bought two tickets because my buddy at the time was going to go with me. and then some unforeseen circumstances occurred where he could no longer go.
What? Let's hear this. Well, what was the circumstance?
He got arrested. So he
not
was
for
not
buying tickets.
Not for buying scalper tickets. So I'm left with two tickets. I got a friend of mine who was willing to. I couldn't charge him the full 75. I think I got 40 for that ticket.
Wow.
So this was a loss. This show. So
that actually cost you $115.
Yeah.
Okay.
For a floor seat at Raw.
Oh wait, sorry. That would be 110.
Yeah, whatever the math works out to be. 75 plus 40.
Yeah.
But I went to this show, and where I was seated was like the last row on the floor right at the entrance. So,
oh, that's the worst.
I stood for the entire time because if you sat, everyone around us was standing and bunching around.
I probably had the exact same seat as you did when I went to WrestleMania 18. And I was the same as you. I bought my ticket at the pre-sale. I was so excited. I was one of the first people to get my ticket. And I ended up getting the last row because that's probably what happened. They probably released the back first. They released the back first, and then they move it up to the front. So because you bought it so early, they probably gave you like the last row of the floor. And you're probably like all the way back like to where the McDonald's was at the Sky Dome, weren't you? Like the second deck was right completely over top of you, wasn't it? Or were you on the 500s?
No. I mean, I was like, wait, the 500. I'm like,
you're in the first row. You're on the floor. Not the floor, but you're on the first deck.
I was next to the ramp. Oh, the Raw ramp. Oh, yeah, okay. Right in front of like where the Brood would make their entrance.
Okay.
I was that first row in front of that part of the ramp.
Oh, you're the first row. Not the last row.
The last row when you're looking back from the ring, but looking at the stage.
Oh,
that's
okay,
where
okay.
I was.
Yeah, so you're actually in the last row. Okay,
yes.
No, but you actually had good tickets because you're...
It was still... Like, you had to stand the whole time, but they also started doing this...
But you're right next to the pyro.
Yes. Yeah. It was incredibly hot. Like, that Brood entrance was, like, unreal. I can't...
They weren't even on this show.
They were on Shotgun Saturday Night.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they were on before that. And also, in dark matches, you had Joey Legend, Rob Fuego,
wow.
Squared Circle Wrestling fame, and you had Scott D'Amore.
Do you remember this to this day?
I looked some of them. I knew that Joey Legend and Rob Fuego had a match because I knew who those guys were. I don't think I knew who Scotty D'Amore was at the time.
Did you take notes?
No note taking back then, but I did bring a sign that read www.xpage.com/page/jpollock or whatever my address was.
Jaws.
I held this thing up and it was like I went back to rewatch Raw the next day and my sign didn't get on at all. But then I recorded Shotgun Saturday Night and the Brood comes up and there I see my sign.
Oh, wow.
Like in perfect view for like 2 seconds.
And
the traffic went just through the roof.
Yeah.
No, I don't think anybody went to that page.
Yeah.
I still have it. I think I have it on tape somewhere.
You don't think somebody would have recorded Shotgun Saturday Night and then happened to pause the image and went, oh, that looks interesting.
Listen, nothing broke my heart more than to hear WWE was doing a Best of Velocity DVD instead of Shotgun Saturday Night because maybe my match would have made it. It was like a Edge and Christian, like Hardy Boys match, I think, on Shotgun Saturday Night.
Yeah.
Maybe that would make it on. Maybe my sign will one day make it onto a best of.
Well, on this WWE Network when they come up with all these Raws.
Well, I want the library of Shotgun Saturday
Shotgun
Night.
Shotgun Saturday. I'm sure they'll have that.
Yeah, why not? In front of 38,000 people.
Yeah.
Easily the biggest Shotgun Saturday Night in history.
If you actually remember the site, I know there's like a little thing that archives the internet. There's like a website that's like an archive of the internet. And if you actually typed it in, you might be able to find it. Remnants of your site.
Oh, maybe I'll look that up.
What's the actual URL?
I can't remember it exactly. I'm pretty
don't
sure.
Don't lie. Come on.
No, because XPage was like GeoCities, where it had, you know, /Coliseum. XPage had something as well.
Well, please find out.
Okay, I'll try and find it. Maybe I'll dig up this tape and I can find my...
Is it John's Audio Wrestling? Was that
No, this was pre-Jaws. This is pre-Jaws.
Well, what'd you call it?
Try xpage.com. Are you looking it up? No.
Okay. xpage.com.
/page/JPollock. That would be my guess.
Slash. I mean, I it wouldn't show up, but let me just put in quotes. Okay. Thrilling radio here.
Well, I'll also tell you how I did come out somewhat, not as much of a loss, because Russell Oliver was doing a huge promotion at the time where if you brought a cash man sign to Raw, you might be able to win money. So
no results.
Well, we'll try and.
But I'm sure our listeners are much more results.
Okay, maybe they'll find it. So anyway, Russell Oliver shows up in like this Superman outfit, and I was under the impression only people with signs would have a chance to get money. No, he came with like a giant stack of bills, okay, and just started handing them out to people. And between me and my friend, we got $125.
Shut up.
Just handed to us.
Oh, man. So then forget everything that you lost. You made money.
Well, my friend got the 100. I got 25. So okay. I made a small thing. My buddy was the smartest, though, because he was like, this is probably fake money. And he went and immediately spent it on, like, merchandise.
Okay. So your buddy not only got a $35 discount on his ticket there.
Then he got $100.
He should have given you that money. What kind of a friend is this?
One that I don't keep in contact anymore.
Fuck this guy. So what's his name? Call him out right now.
His name was Wei Chung. No, it was... we'll leave the... it was nice of him to even come.
Was it Ed?
It wasn't Ed. It wasn't anybody you would know. This was way back in my early teen days.
All right.
My few friends that would go to wrestling. But there you go. So that was...
that's a good story.
I just remember as a kid, though, like the first time going to Raw, I was very much excited for this.
Yeah. So you weren't at the Raw because this... I thought this was the first Raw that was taped.
So did I. But apparently not. There was apparently... They did tape matches at a Skydome show and play them on Raw, but I don't think it was like a traditional, like, the announcers were there.
A house show.
Yeah, but as best I can remember. I mean, Raw was airing sporadically here in Canada at that point on the new VR, and yeah, it was like some weeks it wouldn't even air. It was very hard to follow at a certain time, but this is what I would consider the first official Raw, where it actually didn't even air in the U.S. this night because of the Westminster Dog Show. So yeah, it aired live in Canada, but didn't air till Saturday in the States, the night before the pay-per-view that they were pushing on this show.
Watching this on TV, they kept calling it Saturday Night Raw.
Yeah, Raw Saturday Night.
It was branded as Raw Saturday Night, and I couldn't remember for the life of me why that was. But was it branded that? It couldn't have been branded that for Canada.
No, it must have been normally on Raw on TSN, I'm imagining.
Man, I wasn't really following the product that closely at this time, but I mean, how could you help but not, be exposed to the hype? And I just remember going to school one day, and then my friend, this guy wasn't even really a friend. He was just like a guy who's like, yeah, I went to Raw. Like, he's like, you know, talking like he's like the shit. And I was like, wow, you went to Raw? Because back then you hadn't heard about anybody going to Raw.
Yeah. It was still weird when you would find out friends that watched this thing that you thought only you did.
Well, no, at this point, I think I would say that it was big enough that everybody was talking about Monday Night Raw.
This would have been high school, right?
Yeah, this was high school. But still, at this point, you hadn't heard of anybody going to Raw because they simply never did Raw here in Toronto. So I remember just being very stunned and shocked. Wow, you went to an actual wrestling show? You saw Stone Cold Steve Austin in person. And now...
He was like, yeah, we hung out after.
Yeah. And now it's just not a big deal.
Well, there was... As memory serves me, I remember so many people thought that Paul White was going to debut here on this show because everyone had known that he had left WCW and he was getting set to debut at any point here. So there was a lot of anticipation. Maybe he'll debut on this show. He obviously didn't, and then would debut that Sunday at the pay-per-view. But that was something I recall And other than that, and standing for 3+ hours here for this show. Thank God Raw was only 2 hours at this point, is all I could take. And this was, I mean, 1999 is considered, you know, the for a lot of people, you know, deep into the Attitude period, an extremely popular time. But my God, was this show, so much of it was just so much, I guess, you know, promos, personalities that were over, and matches that were just god-awful.
Definitely.
If you can even qualify some as matches. I mean, a lot of them were just like a sequence of moves before someone would run in.
That's really what it was. I mean, it really feels like a classic Vince Russo type of show where the matches were really an afterthought and everything else happening before and after the matches were really what you were watching for.
This was also 2 years before WCW went out of business. Mm-hmm. They went unopposed on this particular night with Raw preempted. And Nitro did a 5.67 rating that night unopposed.
Wow.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
And 2 years later, gone. Mm. Amazing. So this Raw, everybody, the official numbers for an episode of Raw, the paid audience, 38,661 for a gate of 1.13 million Canadian.
What?
Over 1 million Canadian, which was only 737,000 US because our dollar was pretty terrible at the time.
Oh, that's not good.
Not a bad night, though. Easily the largest attendance in Raw history and a record that I imagine will probably stay unless they ever... They talked about it this year of doing WrestleMania the night at, or sorry, Raw the next night in the Superdome again because so many people would be in. I think unless you were to book a stadium the night after Mania, this number will never be approached.
Yeah, and how much would they charge per ticket, I wonder? I don't think they'll hit this either. I mean, this was such a weird circumstance where Toronto didn't have that arena built yet. They didn't have the ACC built yet.
The Air Canada Centre actually opened up the... Two weeks after this.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was just opening, and I think that the WCW was able to get the first date at the Air Canada Centre with that Mayhem pay-per-view right. We reviewed. So
Toronto didn't have that smaller hockey arena yet, but, I mean, there's also this pent-up, you know, craving for a really hot professional wrestling product at the time, and it was it's kind of similar to what the UFC went through with UFC 129. Where there's just a huge demand, and it was in the same building that they managed to hit some records.
Like, to put this into perspective, when this happened in 1999, this was like the fourth or fifth highest paid attendance in wrestling history.
Yeah.
Ever.
Well, Toronto's always been just an amazing, you know.
Yeah. The Exhibition Stadium show, WrestleMania's.
Why didn't they decide to do a pay-per-view at the Skydome instead of a Raw?
I don't know what their thought process was. This would have been a pretty cool atmosphere.
Not that they really needed to. I mean, even without giving away anything pay-per-view level, they managed to do this.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of it at the time, too, was that when you are doing Canadian shows, it's all the money you're taking in is in Canadian dollars, but what you're paying out to the talent and everything else is in American dollars. So, I mean, that was kind of one of the reasons of...
Right.
Them not running as much in Canada. It didn't stop them from running, you know, WrestleMania in 2002, but certainly the incentive wasn't always there to go to Canada, even though you had, you know, in this instance, just a massive audience. And the month after this would be the first Nitro in Toronto, which sold out instantly at the Air Canada Centre.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been the first wrestling show at the ACC, that right. Nitro. So the show begins with a video going over the Royal Rumble, which... saw Vince McMahon eliminate Steve Austin to win. And as much as people complain about this year's Royal Rumble, I can't imagine people are... If they went back and watched that 99 Royal Rumble,
ugh.
I think you'd take this year's Rumble over that one.
Yeah, that was awful.
We've reviewed that one, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. Where basically Vince stays outside for the whole... I hate that. It was so lame.
So even more, I would have detested this at the time. But the very next night... Vince McMahon waives his rights as the number one contender for the title. So Shawn Michaels, the commissioner, announces Steve Austin's now the number one contender. The guy who lost the Royal Rumble is named basically the winner of the Rumble. What a waste of your money at the night's prior pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. That was the setup. And from there, that led to a Vince McMahon-Steve Austin match booked for the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, which would be happening that Sunday after this Raw in a steel cage match. And the winner would go to WrestleMania to face the champion. And then McMahon booked a match between Steve Austin and Mankind for tonight, which was presumably the night before their big match. He was going to put Austin in this match with the WWF champion, non-title match, to weaken Austin before their cage match. So that was how the show started. And then they introduced us to Raw Saturday night. They claimed 43,000 in attendance, which by pro wrestling standards was a rather mild exaggeration, a mere 5,000 people. And this was when Jim Ross was on hiatus with Bell's palsy. So Michael Cole was calling with Jerry the King Lawler. A youthful-sounding Michael Cole.
I would say a youthful and also a much more...
like he sounded like a teenager to me here in comparison.
And I want to look for the right word here, but like maybe not as confident. And you know, not necessarily like that's a bad thing. Like he was more on his toes and sort of more careful about things that he would say, and not just so much careless. Not to say he is today, but
I felt there were times where the crowd was just so hot, like he was screaming so that you could hear him. Like you really felt like he was trying to be, like really just amplify his voice. It just seemed like he was screaming at times.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely seemed a bit more experienced, and he definitely seemed like he was trying to impress people rather than, you know, like today you see him kind of just even joke around and kind of poke fun of talent when the talent gets in, you know, on the mic with him. But back then, a much different Michael Cole.
Steve Austin comes out just to a gigantic reaction from this crowd who was... I don't know. This crowd was just probably half inebriated already by this point. They were an extremely rowdy bunch. He gets a beer, massive Austin chant. He says he respects Mick Foley, puts him over, and says that he's going to win this match at the pay-per-view and go to WrestleMania, and he promises blood in this cage match on pay-per-view. So Mankind comes out. He is the WWF champion. He has a last man standing match at the pay-per-view against The Rock. And then they tease these two for having a match at WrestleMania, which you're going to get to see tonight. And Foley raises the audience now to 50,000 people in attendance and promises that a beating is going to take place. Now, one clear thing I definitely remember from this that was edited off was this beach ball was being tossed around, and it made its way into the ring, and Mick Foley just stopped, looked at the beach ball, and kicked it clean over the top rope into the crowd, and it got this huge pop.
Wow.
And I remember this aired on the Canadian version. So I guess I hadn't seen this Saturday edited version, but I wonder if they edited other stuff
Why
as well.
Why do you need to edit that?
I have no idea. It's a fun little moment. Yeah. There's a beach ball, and he kicks it back in, and everyone loved it. Yeah. So anyway, the Corporation comes out for the first of about 85 appearances on this show. I hated this music by the end of this program. Jerry Lawler notes, The Rock is what a champion is supposed to look like. Meaning we've been doing the same gimmick since 1999, folks.
Yes.
About what the proper champion should look like.
Mm-hmm.
Rock cuts a promo on Mick Foley. You could really tell Rock was just getting so popular, even though he was a heel at this point, and that would play itself out later when he had a match. Vince McMahon, just huge chant of asshole, which was the, I guess, popular chant at the time, says that Austin has no chance in hell of winning on Sunday. I also noted that there was no mic flash here on their microphone. No WWE mic flash. What the hell is going on? Vince says that no family member or corporation member is allowed to interfere in his cage match on Sunday, or they will be fired. Basically telegraphing that something was up for Sunday. Mm-hmm. And he says that the WWF will never be the same again for Steve Austin after Sunday, and then announces that he will be the guest referee for Austin versus Foley tonight. That ends that segment.
I'm not sure what he meant by that. How is it not the same after the Paul White arrived?
Paul White changed Steve Austin's course forever.
Nothing.
To me, you know, this image, seeing these people in this state, it almost looked like the perfect snapshot of the Attitude Era for me. You had Austin and The Rock here. You had Rock with his sideburns. You had Mick Foley there.
Jacked up Vince McMahon.
Jacked up Vince McMahon. And yeah, to me, it was like this moment that always seemed to me to be the epitome of what that Attitude Era was.
Then we announce a gigantic match. Forget Austin and Foley, the tease of a WrestleMania main event on this show. We were going to get The Rock and Steve Blackman later on tonight.
Wow.
Couldn't wait.
The most charismatic personality in professional wrestling history and the flattest personality in professional wrestling history.
Which one is which? I don't know. Surely you're not denigrating the pride of Anvil, Pennsylvania.
I thought he was from Wisconsin.
No, he's from Pennsylvania.
What was that cheesehead stuff?
No, that was just the gimmick that they came up with. It had no connection to where they were from.
Oh, really?
Then we cut to Deborah, who is just rubbing her legs in front of a camera. Mm-hmm. And then we cut to Mark Henry, who is touching the television screen to try and feel Deborah's legs. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of Ultra HD?
No.
It's like the step above high definition.
Okay.
What is that? It's the hope that that's going to be the next big thing.
This is the higher resolution?
Yeah, it's apparently...
I'm still enamored by the novelty of HD. I don't need something new.
Well, that's what a lot of people are saying. They're trying to sell these Ultra HD sets. I saw one for like $3,500. Nobody shoots in Ultra HD right now.
Yeah, fuck
not
off.
The NFL, what about, nobody.
What is that, like IMAX? What is IMAX?
I don't know.
IMAX is probably higher.
Maybe.
Than that.
So,
but I don't need
that. Anyway, I was thinking maybe this is Ultra HD where you can actually feel what's on the other side of the screen.
I don't know if that'd be possible. Maybe. I don't know what science there needs to be for that.
Ultra HD, Henry Deborah. D'Lo Brown took on Jeff Jarrett next. D'Lo Brown had Mark Henry in his corner. Jeff Jarrett had Owen Hart and Deborah.
Owen Hart was just, I mean, Deborah obviously was the star of this team.
Yes.
Owen, I mean,
completely forgotten.
Completely in the background, didn't matter at all, didn't really have any speaking lines, was just kind of there to trail Deborah.
Yeah, when you look back, I mean, he was supposed to really fill Brett's void as the big Canadian star, mm-hmm. and here you are in Toronto, and he's just a forgotten mid-carder.
He really didn't need to be there.
He was like a Dolph Ziggler or a Kofi Kingston at this point. But did have the tag team championships, which had a bit of luster at the time, but not a whole lot until you'd really get that Edge, Christian, Hardy's, you know, teams up and running. D'Lo gets on the mic, and he tells Mark Henry that he knows he's infatuated with Deborah. So D'Lo has gone out and apparently purchased a woman for all of Henry's needs, saying that she is yours anytime, and she'll do anything you want, anywhere you'd want. And hence the debut of Ivory.
I know you like looking at pretty things. Well, I got someone that'll do exactly what you want. I got someone that'll do anything when you want it. And Mark, my man, she'll do it anywhere you want it. And guess what, brother? She's all yours. So right now, I'd like to bring down Ivory.
Who? Who was brought in as Mark Henry's toy.
Yeah, quite the...
what a debut.
Quite the...
Hey, Lisa, we've got this idea for you. You're going to be Mark Henry's fucking object.
Well, that was only implied. It was...
Implied? This was stated flat out.
Didn't...
She will do anything for you anywhere you want.
Okay, it could be like making a sandwich, you know, cleaning the kitchen.
They didn't really go anywhere with Mark Henry and Ivory.
No, and I wonder why, because I don't know. I felt like, obviously, she was much more capable than what this gimmick was. Not necessarily a very empowering gimmick for...
I don't know if this particular era of WWF would ever be labeled empowering for the female... race, the female gender.
Yeah, yeah, I wouldn't say so. But, I mean, just even for somebody like Ivory, who came in with a bit of a pedigree and, you know, would go on to much greater success, it's hard to remember her debuting like this.
So this was a battle of former TNA agents, Jeff Jarrett and D'Lo Brown.
Oh, that's
both
right.
Both serving as agents over the past couple of years. And a young Jimmy Corderas as our referee.
Right.
Who would have an absolutely awesome moment later on in the show.
Yeah. Al Snow would show up later, too.
That is true. D'Lo Brown hits a drop kick, and Owen grabs D'Lo's leg. Jarrett attacks the leg, gets the figure four on. Ivory distracts Jeff Jarrett, and this leads to D'Lo hitting the sky high for the win at 1:13. That was all the time we had for these two. And then Deborah confronts Ivory, and they start fighting as they are separated by officials, and this would build up their tag match the next night with Jarrett and Owen defending the titles against D'Lo and Mark Henry.
Match doesn't matter at all, just a few bullshit moves, and then the angle, and then the finish, and then the
we'd have fight. A lot of those.
Yep.
So we'll try and keep these recaps fresh. Then we cut to earlier today at the Sky Dome. They actually have a hotel built in there.
The Sky Dome Hotel. What do they call it now? The Renaissance Hotel?
I don't know. But Val Venus was in the skybox with his curtains open in a towel with Ryan Shamrock, who was a woman. And both start making out. They proceed to get onto a bed, and then we see their towels fly into the air.
Yeah, I believe there's like an actual amateur video of this. Before there were viral videos, there were amateur videos.
Really?
Yeah, I believe there's something like this exists on the internet of like maybe like a couple having sex in the Sky Dome Hotel.
But it wasn't Val Venus and Ryan Shamrock.
No, obviously not, but I'm just saying that's probably where they got the idea from. I always thought it was kind of cool. I'm like, wow, this is my city. This is happening in my city.
This unprotected sex, allegedly. So we then went to a video on the feud between Ken Shamrock and Val Venus, where Val had put together a video called Sister Act, where he would come up with porn parody titles. Yep. For his storylines, we had him with a Yamaguchi-san's wife.
Okay.
Which was...
What was that called?
Oh, I can't remember what it was called. Maybe it was... I don't know. Something probably outlining her race. Anyway, this also featured hot dogs as graphics, a shower scene, and then they would cut to Ken Shamrock in this red... where his face was red and the screen was red to emphasize anger.
Yeah.
And Shane McMahon was also here on commentary during this video package yelling, "Those are the worst words a brother can hear. I love him." Which Shane can probably speak to from personal experience in the years to come.
I'm sure.
We cut back and... There were two signs, both offensive by today's standards. We had one that read, "WCW fans are retards." And then the other one way, which you might not have caught, but I did. Right in the front row.
Way is gay. W-E-I.
They spelt it wrong.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe this. I was like, wait a minute. Maybe your friend at school.
Maybe that was you.
It was not me. I did not sit there.
I know you brought a sign. What was on the back of that X page sign?
I don't think I had anything on the back of the sign.
Way is gay.
Yes. So there you go. Wow. Very I'm
glad that
sign.
Made it on camera.
Yeah, I had to go back and make sure that it was what I read. So Kevin Kelly is in the ring with Val Venus and Ryan Shamrock, and the most, like, easy softball for Val Venus here asks, why are you trying to get a rise out of Ken Shamrock?
Yeah.
And he said he's busy trying to get a rise out of Ryan, as Ken then runs down...
From Ryan.
Yeah, that would be even weirder. And Ken runs in, attacks Val Venus... and then attacks the referees, including Jimmy Corderas, having his ankle snapped as he is tapping.
That was some good selling.
Man, Jimmy was on point here to conveying some legitimate pain.
Mm-hmm.
I found this so weird that the storyline here was that Ken Shamrock's sister is dating Val Venus and fucking him all over these arenas across the country. And yet in real life, Ken Shamrock was dating Ryan Shamrock, who was playing his sister, Alicia Webb. Cool. How weird of this? How weird was this Webb?
It's kind of kinky.
It's kind of gross. Can you imagine if, like, you were doing a playway and the person playing your sister was your girlfriend?
Yeah. Well, what? You're only acting, like, you know, 2 minutes out of the whole week.
Could you imagine if, like, you're at an airport and someone sees you guys be acting like a couple and they view you as brother and sister on TV? It'd be so weird.
It would be more weird in the reverse if your real-life sister was playing your girlfriend and...
I guess that's true.
This is fine.
They were originally going to go ahead and do an incest angle between Ken and Ryan Shamrock.
Whoa.
Can you imagine what the Sherdog message board and the fun they would have had with that years later?
What do you mean?
When Ken went back to MMA?
Oh, yes. I imagine the fun Tito would have had.
Oh, boy. Val Venus is in the back getting rubbed down by Ryan in the most PG fashion possible. And says that he is going to end this tonight with Brother Ken.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have Goldust. Goldust, way? 15 years ago.
Yeah.
He actually looked fine here. He didn't, you know, it was more into the 2000s where he let his weight go and had a lot of problems. But
I mean, nowhere near the worker he is.
He's way better today than he was 15 years ago.
I mean, it just didn't even seem like he made in-ring work a priority at this point.
Well, really get to see much, but you're right. It was not emphasized at all at this time period. I mean, his opponent, a character that I'm sure many people remember, Gilbert, Dwayne Gill, who got first we had a delivery man show up with blue roses that Goldust tossed into his face because he had a feud coming up with Blue Dust, the Blue Meanie, for the next day's pay-per-view. That said, every match on that pay-per-view had some kind of angle at least going into it, at least some storyline, rather than just announcing, hey, these guys are wrestling on Sunday with really no rhyme or reason, and you've seen it 5 times on TV already. Mm-hmm. So I'll give them credit on that front. So Gilbert does the whole mocking Goldberg entrance where he comes from the backstage area. I love these Skydome security jackets that these guys came out. These yellow and blue and white jackets with the Skydome logo on it.
Retro now.
He was the light heavyweight champion as well here at this point.
Well, they wanted to give him some type of belt, right? Just like Goldberg. And what's the most meaningless belt they have? And it's the one that Taka Michinoku used to own.
He gets these sparklers at the entrance, and then he's doused by a fire extinguisher and also trips on the steps. I enjoyed this guy. I thought he was funny. Goldberg, like, legitimately was upset about this, which, man, this guy seemed like he was really thin-skinned, like too thin-skinned for pro wrestling.
Come on.
Of all the things you can do in wrestling, which some can be pretty pretty mean-spirited, this I would not categorize as one of them. This was funny.
And didn't we say before that would have been the perfect way for him to come into the WWE was to have Gilbert show up and then have Goldberg just
murder him?
Yeah. It would have been great.
I think they were discussing actually countering this and doing an Austin spoof in WCW, but they never went ahead with it.
Oh, wow.
They could have got Shark Boy way back
when. They could have.
So, a super quick match here. Goldust just... Gilbert goes to spear him, and he just, like, drops him onto the ground, blocking it. Clotheslines him, hits the curtain call, but then Goldust music hits, and Blue Dust appears on the screen in blue body paint on a couch eating, what, grapes? Or something. This was a hideous sight. And Gilbert schools him for the win at a minute 35. And this also ended Gilbert's... He had been doing a losing streak as the opposite.
He was 0-2.
Oh, so it wasn't too much of a streak.
It was the beginning of a streak.
I still believe that Gilbert should have won this match using a taser. Tased Goldberg. They were just coming off that finish.
Oh, like Goldberg had already lost by this point?
It was the Starcade, right? 2 months before? 1 month before this. So that's how I would have done this, where Goldberg wins with a taser. And Goldust just immediately gets whatever heat there was back here by hitting him with the Shattered Dreams in the corner. The lights go out, and then up they come, and he's been doused in blue paint.
I suppose it was like a take on the Brood.
Yeah, this was the Blood.
The Blood, yes. you know, I will say, for this style of show, I will say that there weren't really any slow parts to the show.
This show, I motored through this show. Yeah. This was like wrestling for ADD people.
Yeah, at least it felt like there was something worthwhile to watch every moment of the show. You know, in the particular segment like this, I didn't need to see a full match between Goldberg and Goldust, so all this was fine.
Yeah, it's, you know, we can watch this in 2014, and I probably wouldn't like this as much if we got a Raw like this today, but this absolutely worked at a time, and this was different for people, it was fast-paced, and the mentality was very different, that we have to be constantly moving so that people don't change the channel.
When you think about it, I mean, you watch a particular drama or something, like I'm watching Breaking Bad right now, I'm obsessed with Breaking Bad right now, but you know, you see something...
Wait, like you were on season 3 last time, what are you up to now?
I'm up to season 4 right now. Wow. By the time this comes out, I'll probably be up to season 5.
That's incredible.
It's gotten to the point where like I it feels more like a chore, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm enjoying it, but it's just like gotten to the point where like I can't do anything else.
Are you still enjoying it, or is it like...
No, I definitely am enjoying it. But it's just like I can't do anything else until I finish this. You know, like I can't relax my mind until I finish it.
Wow.
So in that sense, it's like it's like why I don't play video games. It's just I just get too obsessed. So anyway,
have you been given spoilers? Do you know where things are going, or have you been able to block that out?
Did I tell you at one point where like...
Don't ruin anything for me. I do want
to
watch it.
No, I won't. But like I was watching one, and then I was like, man, I really have to go to sleep. But like they always end on cliffhangers, so you always want to keep watching. And on Netflix, it's so easy. So anyway, so like it got to the point where I got so annoyed that I was just like, okay, fuck this. I'm just going to read the spoilers. And just to like...
Oh, yeah, you did tell us.
Just to relieve my mind. And I ended up reading like 8 episodes worth of spoilers in that sitting. But now I'm caught up.
And you still watch those episodes, even though you've read them.
Anyway. Yeah.
I kind of enjoy, at least for wrestling, I like reading spoilers and then watching how it all plays out. Because you have an idea in your head, and sometimes it can be presented very differently.
There are two different types of viewings. Like I would say, you know, after reading spoilers and then watching it, you're kind of more watching from the perspective of a producer,
mm-hmm.
like somebody who knows what's going to happen. How are they going to get to from A to B? But just to watch it as a pure fan is also enjoyable. But what was I going to say about this? So if you think about a drama like that, you know, you rarely see... segments of the show that are meaningless. Like every second, I would say every line within a Breaking Bad is worth something to the overall story. Whereas in a pro wrestling show, what happens within a match is really inconsequential to the overall storyline.
Oh, today on Raw, I mean, what percentage is eating up time as opposed to using time effectively? I mean, you're feeling so much now that it's, we'll throw out a guys for a 18-minute match at 10 o'clock p.m.
Well, you get complete segments that are completely worthless now these days. But, you know, I'm sure this was, you know, that type of thinking was probably much of Russo's philosophy at the time.
I think every segment on this show was built around a match at the pay-per-view, whether of importance or not.
Every moment in the show needs to have some type of importance, and I'm sure like if Russo had his way, he might have just done away with the wrestling in general.
He had said that at one point. He said he would love one day to do a whole episode of Raw without a ring in the arena and not have any matches on a particular episode, and that drew a lot of criticism, but that was kind of his thinking at the time, was that he would much rather just be focusing on characters. And I never, you know, there's this belief that everything Russo is negative, and I never thought that was a poor philosophy of trying to flesh out characters and give them more depth, which a number of them did. You look at how over some of these characters were at this point at the top, and more importantly, the mid and lower card. It was most of them had storylines. Most of them had a catchphrase at least, or something that you at least, when you said Al Snow, you knew exactly what that character was.
Yeah.
You could put him in different situations that you could kind of have a different dimension to a character. Not that they were all these multifaceted characters, but that their personalities were certainly more fleshed out than, say, a you know, pick someone off the roster today that I can't tell you much about Kofi Kingston outside of this guy likes to jump and loud colors.
But I don't think what he, I mean, simply doing that, basically a variety show with pro wrestlers building up to a pay-per-view match.
No, I don't think that. I think that would have been too far in that direction.
Because I think, I mean, you know, pro wrestling at its best is something that, you know, is able to use what's in the ring to build those characters, to build those storylines. I mean, you know, I hate to go back to, like, you know, like, let's just even, like, think about, like, more old school wrestling, you know what I mean? Like, often you would get, oh, some shit would happen here, a tag team partner fucks up somehow, and now these guys have a few, you know what I mean? It's completely different now, but,
Well, the in-ring is what defines this show. That's what these people do. That is the core of this product. Uh-huh. If you were to take that out, I'm sorry, but some of these, this is not grade A acting here from these people. It would be like taking out the sex scenes of a porno.
Yeah.
I mean, you leave it to the rest of it. I mean, that's not exactly keeping an audience.
Yeah.
Maybe it would. I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe. For some sick enjoyment, maybe. I'd watch that. I watch the show just of actors, like pro wrestlers trying to act. In bad backstage vignettes.
Two men that have never been in adult films, Kevin Kelly and Earl Hebner, were in the back, and Earl Hebner told Kevin Kelly that none of his referees will officiate Ken Shamrock's match at the pay-per-view because of his actions tonight, and poor Jimmy Corderas, and said if Ken Shamrock does not have a referee for the match on Sunday, he will have to forfeit his Intercontinental title.
Mm.
DX comes out. To show you how insane this crowd was, there was a Road Dogg is sexy sign. I don't mean to, isolate Road Dogg, but I mean, easily the ugliest of the DX members.
Yeah, but you know what? We've had this discussion before when we're trying to grade the appeal of every member of the Shield. And
Dean Ambrose, you know, we underestimated his appeal.
Confidence means a lot more to I'm sure a lot of women than looks. And Road Dogg certainly had that.
You know, what's the best is that now that the New Age Outlaws are doing all these dates now on the WWE site when they have upcoming shows and they have talent advertised and their photo, they're using the Road Dogg and Billy Gunn's like promo photos from like 99.
Oh, that's
that's
so misleading.
It's photos I totally recognize because they were always the shots they used. So these are like 15, 16 year old photos that they're using to sell them today with. So they invariably don't believe Road Dogg is sexy in 2014. Triple H, this was right after China had turned on DX and joined the corporation. And Triple H, with just an incredibly non-offensive promo, says, if China wants to be a man and play in a man's world, well, she's stepping up to the plate without a bat. And he did not end there. She also cannot draw a walk, as we continue down the baseball analogy, because she's playing without any balls. Get it?
Clever.
No dick. So he then ends it by saying, let's find out whose arrow hits the mark.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Whose arrow hits the mark?
Is that a euphemism for penis? Because he just established he didn't have one.
I have no idea.
Well, that was Triple H's promo. I'm sure he was very proud of it. X-Pac then took the mic and did one of my favorite screaming promos where he confirmed to us that he slammed a cage door on Kane's head and said,
I slammed a steel cage door into Kane's head and made him bleed like a pig.
Yeah, that's the biggest mistake of your life.
Well, just so happens tonight, it's going to be Kane and X-Pac right here on Raw. And I ain't got a problem with that one bit, because I ain't afraid of nobody, Kane!
Man, this guy is just, like,
what a terrible promo.
Yeah, he's just not a good promo. I suppose in the future, you wouldn't even really hear him talk that much, and I guess there's a reason why, because, you know, at least during this DX run, it was just this, he would come out, he'd be very over, especially at this point, But, like, his promos are just kind of wild and not very controlled. It would just be him looking very intense and just screaming whatever it was on his mind.
Yeah, he then cut a promo on Shane McMahon saying that if Shane thinks he can beat him, don't sing it, bring it.
No.
So that rhymes.
Yeah.
So that was where we were going with X-Pac. It was just everyone took turns with the microphone. Road Dogg did his New Age Outlaws intro, which just everyone sang along with, and then cut a promo on Al Snow for their match at the pay-per-view, and then said that he's going to stomp a mud hole in his ass and moonwalk it dry. Now, Road Dogg at the time, he was not in the good books of one Dwayne Johnson, because Road Dogg had always felt that Rock stole some of his lines at times. And these two, they were very open about kind of not getting along with one another, at least at this particular time period. And then we had Road Dogg here using a line that I'm pretty sure most people coined with Jim Ross, that he would use with Steve Austin, stomping a mud hole. Oh, I'm just saying. I had never heard that term outside of Jim Ross before.
Okay.
Maybe it's a big term in the South. And then Billy Gunn gets on the mic. He does not have a match tonight. So he takes off his shirt, revealing a referee's shirt. Road Dogg asks if he's looking for a job at Foot Locker, and said no, he will be refereeing the Ken Shamrock Val Venus match. Problem solved after all of 3 minutes, where that match and Ken Shamrock's title reign was in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
And that was DX coming out to talk.
You know, I thought good stuff from DX, you know, even despite maybe Sean Waltman's kind of crazy promo. I really felt like all four characters were clicking, all four were over, all four fulfilled a unique responsibility within the group. They had a real, you know, like prime four horsemen type of vibe to them.
Now, they broke up DX the following month at WrestleMania. Do you think that was a good time? Because that was when Hunter really wanted to break away, and the others felt that they had a lot more juice left. But I kind of felt they left when people were still into them, and it wasn't dragging.
It worked well for Hunter, yeah.
He did great.
Yeah, for all the other three, I thought it was terrible. I don't think X-Pac really regained his prime that he experienced.
Until his next group.
Oh yes, the
wait.
Yo, you dealing with the X Factor?
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
Yo,
oh, I know you hate the X Factor, but you ain't gotta look at me like that. I said you ain't gotta look at me like
that. That group.
And neither did I. I think Road Dogg nor Billy Gunn experienced the same success that they had at this point either.
Then we had, well, I say had in quotations, Mankind against Steve Austin. Vince McMahon is the special referee. McMahon tells them he's throwing the rule book out the window. He is allowing eye gouging, chairs, tables, furniture, and says groin shots would be appreciated. I did enjoy this this big John McCarthy rule overview by Vince McMahon. Austin tells Vince that neither of them are going to get their asses kicked. And there was something here in the stipulations where Austin is not allowed to touch Vince until the cage match. He says, I'm not going to do it. He is. And Vince turns around and gets attacked by Mick Foley and Socko. As the corporation then storms the ring, there's a big brawl. Crowds going nuts as Austin and Foley fight all of them off. So our tease of Mankind and Austin would not be happening on television.
Were you pissed?
No, I didn't really care.
Oh, you didn't really want to see Foley versus Austin?
I was, I don't know. I never got upset with TV stuff. Had this been a pay-per-view, of course you'd be upset, but I didn't really care about this. Right. I mean, you bought your ticket to go to Raw. You weren't buying it for any specific match, right?
Okay.
You get what they give you. The corporation then comes back out after the break. They came in for this run-in, went all the way back so that they could re-enter to their music. And Vince announces Austin will be taking on the corporation minus The Rock in a gauntlet match later tonight. And then tells Austin, put that in your pipe and smoke it. Just to timestamp this particular episode of Raw.
People don't say that anymore?
I don't know if most people say it. The last person I heard say that was Don Cherry. Interestingly enough, during Rob Ford's swearing in as mayor of Toronto.
Wow.
He said, to all you critics of Rob Ford, you can put that in your pipe and smoke it, which Rob Ford took him up on and did.
Yeah. I wonder if Don Cherry was referring to what type of pipe he was referring to.
Oh, I don't know which pipe.
I don't know.
Big week in Toronto politics with What's this that? Book on Rob Ford coming out called Crazy Town.
Are you going to read it?
Yeah, I am.
Cool.
I'm going to buy it on my Kindle.
Do you think it'll reveal anything that we don't know?
It's already... they have a phone conversation, not a phone conversation, but a recording
yeah.
of right after Rob Ford was elected. His wife was in a car with a confidant who was secretly recording this outside of a Tim Hortons in a parking lot, where she said that now that he's been elected, he still wants to party, and said he's willing to give up pills, but he isn't going to give up the blow, even though he's now mayor. So,
oh my.
They have this whole conversation written out, and they have it taped. Like, they have the recording of it. So that's the latest big shoe-to-drop involving our mayor, who I believe is Teflon at this point. I don't think anything can hurt this man now.
I don't think he really has any power right now. He's just really, like, sort of
the deputy mayor's running everything now.
He's sort of like our funny mascot.
Kind of.
Yeah.
There's certainly a role for the man.
I like him as the funny mascot.
So the corporation gauntlet is set up. And then the Godfather comes out, does his usual spiel with the three hoes, mm-hmm. as they were referred to at the time, ho mm-hmm. 1, 2, and 3. And this was, to me, the epitome of an Attitude Era Raw match. The Godfather against Viscera,
yeah.
accompanied by Midian, who joined the announce table with a detached eyeball in... formaldehyde or something.
Oh, man.
This was his eyeball that he would tell Lawler and Cole, he's got his eye on you.
Yeah.
We don't get enough eyeballs in wrestling as gimmicks.
I guess, like, Marilyn Manson was big at the time, and I don't know.
Midian had just joined the Ministry of Darkness.
Yeah, I know. And he was, I guess, amongst a couple of these characters that seemed to be very gothy. And I, for some reason, why they chose this guy, Viscera, to play one of those characters, I have no idea. He freaked the shit out of me. This
just because of the contact lenses?
Yeah. And the hawk and the shiny black suit, the jumpsuit. It was just such a weird...
Like, this man exists in the world. Like, he's at airports having to check in.
Does he actually dress like that in real life?
Well, I mean, the hair, you can't get rid of the hair. I mean, maybe it's different contact lenses, but that's a gigantic man.
Yeah.
Imagine him going through an airport in like a wife beater with all his tats on him. And
oh, my.
That's a big man.
Yeah.
So there was a splash to the Godfather in the corner. He dropped an elbow, and this elbow drop was so devastating that Midian just had to get up and run in at a minute 25. Couldn't beat the Godfather. Godfather's on something right now, guys. Yeah. We can't be trivializing losses for one Charles Wright. So DQ win for the Godfather. They continued to attack the Godfather. Viscera splashed him twice. And this was not building up to the Godfather and Viscera, but rather Midian would be taking on the Big Boss Man on pay-per-view. You got to pay for that one. Boy, folks.
Yeah, I'm there.
This WWF undercard in 1999.
Yeah.
Not thriving. Val Venus and Ken Shamrock are seen brawling in the locker room, and they get separated by Billy Gunn, and then DX is separating all of them. After the break, X-Pac against Kane, accompanied by China. These two would go Broadway by Attitude Era standards. 2 minutes and 58 seconds. As Kane had the advantage at the start, hit a giant hip toss, and then choked him in the corner, drops X-Pac on the barricade, got the steps. Then they're back into the ring. X-Pac starts attacking his knee, goes for the X-Factor, but China runs in for the low blow. So this match ends in a disqualification.
Oh, another meaningless match with the screwy finish.
How many fucking DQs do we have on this thing? Like, yeah. To throw out the main event, which had like 8 self-contained DQs, but this was the whole night. We had like either distraction finishes. Yeah.
They basically tell you, don't bother watching anything between the bells. Just, you know, the... Tune in before and after the match.
In a weird way, there is a certain happy medium to knowing that if you want clean finishes and matches, that is what you have to pay for. Because I think to a degree, when you watch Raw every single week now for 3 hours, and you get maybe 3 15-minute matches on there, mm-hmm. a lot of rematches at pay-per-views, I'm sure, you know what, over the limits on Sunday night for $55,
okay,
it's not that enticing.
But you're also, I think in a way, conditioning your audience to not care at all about wrestling when you do that. When if you just have matches like this, I mean, for me, if I'm only watching this product, then I only care about the storyline. What's to stop? Like, what's? I'm watching this and I'm thinking, why would I pay for something that I'm conditioned not to be entertained by? I'm conditioned to tune out of. Why wouldn't I just go online and read up the results? Because that's all that really matters anyway.
Well, I think that was the incentive, is that if you're just in this for results, yeah, you can do that. But the strength of our show are our personalities and all of this other side stuff that appeals to a much larger casual audience that mm-hmm. probably aren't the most ardent pro wrestling fans, but they are interested in these characters.
So then what's the point of buying this pay-per-view?
The pay-per-view is where you get to see a lot of these personalities and programs come to a conclusion. If you've been watching for a year, Austin and Vince in a cage match where they promise you a winner, hopefully if they've done their job, you want to see how that concludes. It's like finding out the issue where Peter Parker comes back.
Right.
You've invested for a year here. You want the conclusion.
Then I only want to see the conclusion. Why am I paying something $50 to sit through 30 minutes of what I consider to be meaningless pro wrestling just to see the conclusion?
I think that, well, their goal is that this isn't meaningless. It's you get the match and you also get the story.
But I'm being conditioned by watching this product to not care about what's in the ring.
I think they're telling you that it's you're only simply getting you're not getting the resolution
on TV.
I'm
getting a snippet of what's to come.
Getting the trailer. The movie you got to pay for.
This Godfather Viscera match is a preview of what I could get.
You've got to pay to find out if Midian's going to get his just desserts by the big boss man's nightstick. Then we cut to the back. Oh, sorry. First, Kane lays out X-Pac, and then China scoop slams him because at the pay-per-view, they're doing Kane and China against Hunter and X-Pac. They stomp on him, and China goes to deliver X-Pac the pedigree when Hunter runs in, shoves Kane into China. They fight off Kane, and China goes to run at them, but they duck, and Kane pulls her to the apron. So if you want to see Hunter and X-Pac get their hands on China, it's going to cost you $29.95.
All right, I guess. But if you notice here, Hunter never actually lays his hands on China. Because he is secretly working with her this whole time. China was wearing these, like, assless chaps.
It was, very strange. Road Dogg is then showing late...
It was attitudinal.
Yeah. They had also released a shirt at the time that read, Enter the China.
Clever.
So clever.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm sure she wore that proudly around everywhere.
Yeah.
Road Dogg is laid out in the back. He's out cold. Like, the man might have had a stroke. He's bleeding from the ear.
Wasn't that one of the names of her later movies?
Enter the China?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
One Night in China.
One Night in China. Much less clever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which X-Pac would also take a pedigree in.
That's right. Yeah.
Anyway.
He was in that feud, too.
There was a low blow as well.
Yeah.
So Road Dogg's bleeding from his ear. And he's saying the word Billy. They pointed out that he's saying Billy when they asked him. And this went nowhere.
Well, the EMTs were like, who's Billy? Who's Billy? So clearly they don't watch this I don't know. I you're right. I don't know.
Like, were they? I don't think they were going with the breakup this early.
Who beat him up?
Well, what was going on at the time?
Been Hunter.
I guess maybe he was just confused. He saw blonde hair flying and assumed, oh, it must have been that prick Billy.
Yeah.
What was actually going on, though, with Road Dogg at the time, he had hurt himself and was also going through a lot of drug issues at the time and did some time in rehab around this time to the point that they took him off the pay-per-view the next night and put Hardcore Holly in his spot.
Wow.
So he never even worked the pay-per-view. He'd only be gone for about a month, and then he'd be back on the road.
I'm surprised they didn't work a bigger angle than this. I mean, this didn't really explain anything.
I don't think they could, because he had really messed up his neck a few nights before this on a house show, and I don't think he could physically do anything. Like, part of his body was numb from falling out of the ring.
Okay.
I was reading about this.
I mean, I suppose they would make maybe a closer association to either Al Snow or Hardcore Holly in this,
I think they might not have known when he was coming back and just thought, well, let's just write him off.
But, I mean, they were going to build to a match on the pay-per-view between Al Snow and Hardcore Holly, right? Anyway.
They would have plenty of time. They were like, hey, we can do this with this guy over the next 15 years.
Yeah.
So Al Snow comes out. He cuts a promo. And still is teasing the match with the Road Dogg, even though we just saw him laid out. Says that he is Road Dogg is hardcore, but he is not the crown prince of hardcore like himself. He's not waiting until Sunday, and makes an open challenge for a hardcore match. No one responds, so he announces he will have a hardcore match with himself. He brings out a table, a cookie sheet that actually had cookies on it, and then proceeds to hammer himself with the microphone. He sprays a fire extinguisher in his face, breaks a broom over his head.
That is so dangerous.
And like, stupid.
Yeah. Like, you can get asthma.
Maybe he could. Maybe he did.
Could have had an asthma attack.
Yeah. Be like getting hypothermia out in the snow.
Yeah.
He then opens the table, puts it in the ring, and proceeds to moonsault off the top rope through a table. So Hardcore Holly shows up. Snow just shoves him away and then punches him. They were both members of the Job Squad at the time. And then they just end up fighting into the crowd, and Holly takes a chair shot to his head. The officials get involved to separate them, and then this would be the match we would get the next day at the pay-per-view.
At what point did he actually become Hardcore Holly? Because wasn't he still Bob Holly at this point?
This was, I think, right around this time they transitioned him over when he got involved in the hardcore division.
Right.
Then, in a weird segment, Kevin Kelly is with Darren Drozdov, and Kevin Kelly asks what his problems are with the Oddities, and Droz ignores it and asks Kevin Kelly why he called him a punk on Sunday Night Heat, and ends up punching Kevin Kelly, and then Steve Blackman pulls Droz off and makes the save for Kevin Kelly. This is just a strange segment that I don't recall going anywhere.
I'm sure it had a point.
Sure. And that led up to the big match way. The Rock against Steve Blackman.
Yeah.
The Rock came out to just a massive reaction. This crowd loved this man.
What about Steve Blackman?
They did not have a massive reaction for Steve Blackman. The Rock was wearing his workout attire at this point after he was coming off of a gyno surgery.
Mm.
So he wore this this little outfit for a couple of months. And
What is that for? For, like, bitch tits?
That's the term that's used, okay, I guess, in the industry. They push the fact that The Rock and Mankind are going to have a last man standing match, and they emphasize there must be a winner. Do you remember who won that match?
Nobody.
It was a no contest.
Yeah.
And then they do the real match the next night on Raw for free.
Hmm.
I imagine John Pollock of today would just be outraged at the time. The crowd is just all into The Rock. This was such basic stuff here. Just a couple sequences here for each guy. The Rock hit a DDT. He did the crane pose to mock him. Not even trying to be a heel here. And then The Rock gets on Michael Cole's headset, cuts another promo as Blackman has to sell like an idiot here. Blackman got a vertical suplex, a back elbow, and a flying shoulder block. But then Steve Blackman missed the brogue kick into the ropes and takes a rock bottom, the people's elbow, which the crowd is just losing their shit for, and Rock pins him at 3 minutes and 51 seconds.
Just a very hot crowd. I also noticed a ton of signs.
Dude, this was insane. The amount
way
of
more signs than you even see today. I mean, I feel like maybe at this point, I guess it was still a real novelty to everybody, especially in Toronto with the first Raw in I guess, I mean, technically the first Raw ever.
Yeah.
So everybody was like, oh, a wrestling show. I mean, you brought a sign.
I brought a sign to that show.
So
I was thinking business. I was like, I gotta get hits on my site.
And that's all you could see throughout the crowd here.
It looked awesome. Like, it looked like a giant party.
Yeah, it looked amazing.
It was incredible. You don't get that in any other sport.
Waze gay?
Well, some people were not. They were a little offensive. But also, I never could understand, like, people would bring signs to house shows at this time too. Yeah. Like, it was so embedded that for wrestling fans, you bring a sign. Like,
yeah.
And it didn't transfer over that it was like TV, non-TV, you bring a sign.
I wonder if certain people realized, I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if kids always realize that a house show is not necessarily televised. I don't know if they knew the
difference. I'm sure a lot go not knowing the difference.
And, you know, I guess it's always the fun of maybe having the wrestlers see it or other people in the crowd see it.
So the corporation comes out for the main event. To that lovely song.
It's still around today.
No Chance in Hell.
Oh, it's a classic.
Vince still, he loves it.
I think it's great.
It's a good song.
You don't like it?
It was just a lot on this show. Yeah, like, it was. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So the gauntlet began.
They never tried to update that song because they would try to update almost all their
They
songs.
Tried to remix it when they did the corporate ministry and they had weird remix that didn't last very long.
It was a mashup.
Yeah, it's like... Yeah, it was like this weird, like, fucking, like, kind of hip-hop-ish. It was terrible. It was not very good. So, I mean, these were barely matches here. Steve Austin and Ken Shamrock began. Did you catch the Ryerson sign facing the hard camera all night?
Ryerson 609.
69.
No, 609.
Yeah, like 69.
Oh.
Yeah, someone wanted to have sex with Ryerson. Of all the universities, which one do you really want to...
Well...
69.
I mean, it just goes
to Not show. York.
Okay. It just goes to show the level of intelligence of most people from that school.
What are you trying to say?
Some real idiots. Ray Allen was sitting here. And some other NBA players.
From the Timberwolves?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, he's... isn't he with the Heat now?
Probably. I don't know. He was with the Timberwolves, wasn't he? He was with the Bucks, I think.
I have no clue.
Ray Allen, I think he was with...
The Raptors used to play at this.
Yeah, dude, I remember going to Raptors games at the Sky Dome, and it was...
it was an awkward layout, for sure.
It was terrible, because they'd never fucking fill it either. It was
a baseball field.
Let's find out Ray Allen here.
He plays for the Heat right now.
He played for Milwaukee. At this time, he was with the Bucks.
All right.
And then he went to Seattle, Boston, and now Miami.
Yeah.
We're all right. It's quite a lengthy career the guy's had.
So, yeah, he was here at the Sky Dome watching the Steve Austin gauntlet.
Wow. Well, we got Austin and Ken Shamrock starting. Earl Hebner was in the ring. I believe this was the only match he officiated. And this crowd was just... Between Vince and Hebner out there, the You Screwed Brett chants were deafening here.
Oh, they edited that out too, didn't they?
I could make it out.
Oh, I couldn't.
It was pretty loud here. Austin just got out of the ankle lock, hit the stunner, and Test ran in. So there was a DQ, and we just went right into the next one. Quick back and forth. Austin stunned Test. So Kane ran in for a DQ. Austin and Kane went back and forth. Austin hit a Thez press. There was an elbow drop for a big pop. I mean, crowd was loving all this, no matter how shitty it was. Kane chokeslammed them for a two count. Then Austin countered a tombstone, hit a stunner. China runs in with a low blow. Austin then ducks and stuns China. Big Boss Man is in, and it leads to Vince throwing a nightstick in, and Boss Man just beat the piss out of Austin with this nightstick to the point that Austin's laid out in the ring. Vince comes into the ring, presumably as the final man in the gauntlet, gets everyone out of the ring, takes off his shirt to show his pre-wellness physique, and mocks Austin, pins him after the nightstick beating to get a lot of heat on Vince going into the pay-per-view. And then Vince starts drinking beer. The corporation drags Austin into the corner, and Vince just gets into his face, pouring beer on him, yelling at him. This would be a very famous image that they'd use for the cover of a video where Vince is just yelling at him in the corner, being as only Vince McMahon can be, off the air.
I thought Vince was so awesome.
He was very good here. This was his absolute peak as a performer.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. Say what you will. This whole thing felt like an episode of TNA with just running after running. But, you know, it served its purpose. I thought it actually provided a very good visual to lead into the pay-per-view. And Vince, all he had to do, take his shirt off, get in Austin's face, and just, like, his hilarious over-the-top facials I thought were great.
So did they make you want to see the pay-per-view way?
You know, I will say yes. I mean, I can't like, listen, I don't know. Maybe I just have a different context or a different set of criteria when reviewing a show like this from this time. But I thought overall, it wasn't – obviously, you can't judge any of the wrestling on this show. It was really worth nothing. But just as a viewing experience, I thought it was a snapshot of an amazing time in professional wrestling when the product was really hot. Everybody on this show seemed over. Wrestling was bad, but the crowd was great. Storyline seemed very successful. So, yeah, I will say it was successful in that.
I thought they did a really good job of that by – I'm a sucker for just – they continue to emphasize how important this show is. And you're going to get all this stuff at the pay-per-view and just over and over and over that you feel by the end of it, man, I want to see this show. Like, this really seems important. They've told me for 2 hours it is. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, I thought it was it worked very well for them.
Do you think they should have done anything to maybe push the Paul White debut a little bit more?
I think they really wanted it to be a surprise because the most you got was that tease by Vince saying no family or corporate member can interfere, kind of opening the door with wrestling logic that means someone new would be coming out to interfere. He has a backup plan. But yeah, there was no way it was implied that Big Show was coming.
I just remember like when it did happen and it was just sort of a – sort of a lackluster debut.
He was really fumbled right from the beginning. I mean, looked like a goof in that match, giving Austin the win, and then they beat him like a month later on TV. Like, it was just... I just think he was really mishandled right from the start, and then just did constant turns over the next year or two. All right, let's get into feedback. We got a bunch of it for this particular episode of Raw. Derek from Denton, Texas. Hey, guys, hope you're having a good day. Are you having a good day?
Yeah,
that's great. This is around the time I started watching the WWF more than I did WCW. This is a real good Raw in terms of storylines developing, even though only two matches were actually all right. Crowd was extremely pumped for this episode of Raw, which is always an awesome thing when watching old wrestling shows. I thought Austin, Mankind, and The Rock were great as always during this time, but I also have begun to appreciate Vince from this time as well because he was obsessed with taking Stone Cold and Mankind out. Overall, this was a pretty big show. Give it an 8 out of 10. Also, if you guys are looking for any new television shows to watch, I recommend the following. It's pretty damn good.
Well, I will say after this thing, I'm through with Breaking Bad. I'm in no hurry to start another relationship with another TV show.
As he mentions there, you know, Austin and Foley and you mentioning as well, you know, this snapshot of the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
Does it kind of, you know, emphasize to you, I mean, you just look at today and I really feel this is like Mick Foley, you watch back at this time. I think if you just watched TV now, you wouldn't view Mick Foley as like this such a pivotal character as he was at this particular time.
You mean the Mick Foley of today?
Yeah. Like he is not treated as some, you know, endearing legend that he really was on par with these guys at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I will say I probably viewed him at a greater level than I did after he came back. Like, I'm saying, even while he was, within TNA, I feel like his value was a little higher. I mean, if we're basically here talking about his latest run with the WWE, where he was brought back to play Santa Claus. He had a legend deal where he really did nothing. Nothing of value. It was this show, Saturday Night Slam, Saturday Morning Slam GM.
Yes.
And that's really it. He was just sort of like, he's Captain Lou Albano. He's the new Captain Lou.
Mick Foley, he put up this video this week talking about the CM Punk situation. And back when those two were doing that kind of mini program, doing promos back and forth, he said he would get to TV.
Wait, was CM Punk?
Remember when they were doing...
Or Dean Ambrose?
No, with Punk. Okay. And it led up to... They couldn't do the match, obviously, because Foley wouldn't get clearance. But for a few weeks there, they did promos together in the ring.
I don't even remember.
It was while Punk had the title. But anyway, Punk would get like stuff from the writing team for his promos. And it seemed like every week they'd put in some comment where he'd have to make fun of Mick Foley's weight, and Punk would just throw the promo away. But it's like, that's kind of the mentality you get of how they viewed Mick Foley.
Absolutely.
Like, let's get in a dig on the guy's weight.
Yeah, and that's silly, because I mean, shit, dude.
There's people that if they grew up in 99, they viewed him as, you know...
He's on the level of a Shawn Michaels, on the level of I would say, a Rock or Austin, you know?
I would say at this specific time, he was number two to Austin ahead of The Rock.
And certainly ahead of Triple H.
Oh, absolutely, at this time.
Look at how everybody views Triple H right now. And, you know, granted, that's a different circumstance. But definitely, definitely. We go to Robert, who says, compared to this time this episode was taped, I can't say I'm too crazy about it right now. Maybe I'm too used to what the WWE are doing. I don't know. I used to like it at the time, but now I can't believe I ever did. Is it because of WCW existing back then and the NWO shoved down our throats for the 100th week? I don't know. A lot of I don't knows.
Jay Hunter. Attitude Era Raws are so much more pleasant to watch than pay-per-views. Half the length, storyline-driven, pretty much everyone's over, and they can cut a promo. Hard to believe that the WWF were only paid about $100,000 per Raw back then. The idea you could hold WrestleMania and your weekly show in the same massive stadium is incredible. $17,000 less for Raw, of course, but it's still really impressive. Shocking seeing so much emphasis on mid-carders, having proper angles, Ryan Shamrock's overprotective brother, Blue Dust, and even Midian taking on behalf of Taker's ministry. I popped when Billy shouted wham before punching Val in the locker room. I missed that. It's like a 60s Batman episode. Lawler's pervert gimmick was a lot fresher back then, and when Blue Dust or Gold Dust got the blue bath, I really hope we'd hear, "He's just blue gold dust." Thank you. He just blew gold dust. There, took me a second.
Tam, there were some things that I loved about this time period on the show: the McMahon-Austin feud, Mankind as WWF champion, The Rock, Al Snow, and his madness. Then there are things I dislike about the Attitude Era. A sex addict and a porn star in the shape of Mark Henry and Val Venus. The fact the women are used mainly as objects. Goldberg was great. As someone who disliked Goldberg, I used to get a kick out of the WWF mocking him. And finally, I watched the episode of Nitro that opposed this episode of Raw on the Monday, and I can safely say WWF Raw wins in terms of quality for the week of February 8th, 1999. It was the episode Raven went shopping with Canyon.
Let's go to Jake. Wow, watching this took me back to so many memories of watching wrestling back in elementary school. The first thing you notice is how hot the crowd is. Sure, Raw has its moments here and there these days, but this was a show where I think there was just as many signs as in the crowd as there were people. Product is very much a sign of the times as well, with things in the opening package alone that would never make it onto today's WWE television. I was never much a fan of Austin during the boom period. I never really liked his promos, and while he was fine in the ring, Austin was just someone I never cared much for. I can't hear a Stone Cold promo these days without thinking of those Stone Cold ET YouTube videos, but I digress. It was awesome hearing Shane McMahon again on commentary during the Venus Shamrock vignette. I forgot how much I enjoyed him as a color commentator on Heat. This was an awesome era for WWE. I liked most of the angles, and this was at a time that the undercard felt just as important to the main event. While I can clearly remember watching more WCW around this time because Hogan made his return, I remember thinking the WWE overall had the better show to offer, and this Skydome Raw was proof of that.
Headstrom says, today's WWE talent have nothing on the Attitude Era superstars. Sure, it has something to do with what they could get away with back then, but when pretty much everyone on the roster could cut a decent promo, I can't help but say it was so much better back then. It's like trying to compare the high-flying 80s NHL to today's game. Sure, most of the athletes are bigger, stronger, and faster, but it's not nearly as entertaining to watch today's stars as they're held back by a rule book. It only speaks to the oversensitive, wussified world we now live in. Thank goodness we have a library of shows to look back on.
Let's go to Chris in Ottawa. I was so excited to see the show, even though the angles weren't advanced much at all during the show and wouldn't air live in the U.S., Canada, and Toronto in particular, is often labeled bizarro world for cheering and booing things they're supposed to boo and cheer respectively. However, I'm sure you'll agree that this isn't bizarre behavior, but rather a decades-old pattern of Canadian fans paying homage to the best performers rather than going into business for themselves. And they would often correctly predict which wrestlers would make better faces rather than heels during the Attitude Era. The reaction for The Rock was particularly memorable for me, as he was cheered from the word go by this Skydome crowd, and even took a break in the match to smell the crowd's adulation. It wouldn't be long after WrestleMania 15 that Rock would turn back babyface and remain that way for several years. I give the actual show a 4 out of 10, but the memories score a perfect 10, as I was so proud that Canada played host to the biggest Raw ever.
Josh says,
I attended this show, but I can't remember why it was in the Sky Dome. It wasn't the only time they used the section for their shows. I went with two high school buddies, and we were hoping Paul Wyatt would make his debut, but it didn't happen until the pay-per-view. I remember hearing rumors that his name would be Titan. Yeah, seriously. I don't remember much about just the Austin versus the Hulk Corporation, and I believe Taker made an appearance to help Austin and Foley after the cameras went off.
Mike from...
Is that true? Did that happen? You remember Taker showing up?
He came in afterwards, after in a dark segment at the time. And yeah, just cleared the ring of the corporation. Mike from Australia. Guys, I've been a Law listener for a little over a year now, and I've spent a lot of time going through old review aways. I can easily say it's one of my favorite podcasts. John, you've said many times in the past that there was a lot of bad TV in the Attitude Era that people forget about, and this edition of Raw was a perfect example. What an awful show. The low point of this, which was Al Snow's match against himself, which ranks up there with the hardcore title win over Head. The main thing on this product had that today's lacks were a lot of distinct and strong personalities, which is what was built around and not on the actual wrestling. D'Lo and Jarrett got about a minute, and the main event was too short and rushed and made the corporation look like a bunch of geeks. However, it did serve the purpose, with Vince getting the pinfall over Austin leading into the cage match, and I'll never forget the iconic image of Vince in Stone Cold's face to close the show. This piece of footage was shown countless times during their feud, and I believe is the cover of the Austin McMahon VHS. A couple more thoughts. I completely forgot that Sean Waltman was a babyface here. The guy is such a loser, and he's always come off as someone who wants to get the rub by hanging out with the cool kids. It seemed like The Rock got a better face reaction than Austin, especially for the Rock Bottom and corporate elbow as compared to the Stunner. The live crowd was always amazing during this time period, and it looked like 75% of the audience had a sign.
We go to Andre from Edmonton, who says, all I have to say about the show is that a certain referee, Jimmy Corderas, has no pain tolerance. The second Ken slapped that ankle lock on him, he tapped out. You think he could last a few seconds without tapping out? Oh yeah, and I forgot how much I enjoyed Goldberg. He was always fun to watch.
Gaurav from India. Wow, how hot was the wrestling business back then? 43,000 people attended this Raw taping in Toronto. Today we hardly get 10 in the arena, even for pay-per-views, unless it's Chicago or New York. What struck me the most after watching this episode of Raw was how over each and every single character on the show was with the crowd. That's because the WWE let these characters develop, and they gave everyone some mic time each week. That's how one connects with the audience. Austin entered the arena 3 times in one night and got the loudest pop all 3 times. Each wrestler had a storyline back in the day. Even if the storyline sucked, they at least had one. It wasn't like Shamrock and Venus were just out there every week to wrestle for nothing like Sandow and Ziggler do in today's era. When there is an actual storyline program, even for mid-carders, the audience automatically cares. Jimmy Corderas took the belly-to-belly suplex and ankle lock from Shamrock like a boss. That last image we got before the show went off the air of Austin and Vince staring at each other and cussing each other out defined the greatest era in wrestling. The McMahon-Austin feud made the Attitude Era a huge success, with supporting roles from DX, Rock, Val Venus, etc. Thanks for reviewing this episode.
The guy who's ahead. I finally cracked and joined the board. I tend to avoid these due to the neck-bearded trolls. Now for my review. Holy shit, that's a lot of signs. 20 minutes of promos to open, haven't seen that recently. Vince was the best. He really shines on this show and also deserves a Putski Award for the ref shirt. The promo with draws was sad just because I know what's to come. Austin's gauntlet match wasn't so bad. I feel like Russo just wanted to maximize the number of run-ins or something. Vince wins, screams in Austin's face. Pretty iconic image for the future. 5 run-ins out of 10.
And finally, from Skull Captain, after last week's horror show, it's interesting that you chose a Raw which displayed some of the best and worst that WWF 1999 had to offer. Let's start with the positives. The Toronto crowd was great, as usual, not just the sea of signs, but actual banners with sticks. The talent roster was good in the ring and better on the mic, and everyone had interesting characters to play from top to bottom. The bad was that this show had a severe case of Russo-itis. This condition can often be fatal if exposed too long, i.e. WCW, and is characterized by excessive run-ins, nonsensical storylines, and filthy language. Thank goodness Dr. Vinnie Mac was carefully controlling the disease to prevent any lasting damage. Overall, 5 assless chaps out of 10. So there you go, everyone. Some fond feedback or memories from the feedbackers towards Raw in 1999. I always wonder, way 15 years from now, if people are going to go back and watch this past Monday's Raw from Omaha, Nebraska, and talk about, man, that's when wrestling was great.
I guarantee you they will.
John Cena. They don't make him like John Cena anymore.
No, not necessarily John Cena, but certainly some of this Daniel Bryan stuff, I think, makes for some very solid moments that we can all look back at years later and be like, wow, that was quite incredible. who knows, maybe we'll all live in like internment camps in the future where we won't even get to watch wrestling anymore. And this will be just a wonderful memory to be even be able to freely watch wrestling in our society when we don't have to be slaves working for some type of, monarch ruler.
What if? Yeah, that's really something to really download and process.
So be grateful for what you have.
Okay, well, there you go, everyone. 2029, not looking too exciting right now based on Wei Ting's forecast.
You never know, it could all be over.
Okay, well, this is over right now. We are going to look ahead, Wei, to next week, because on Review Away next week, we're going to have a special guest on from WrestlingObserver.com, Todd Martin.
Wow. Also, Sherdog.
Yes, Sherdog, the LA Times, a man of many outlets.
Capital T.
Capital T himself.
Yeah.
T-Pain will be with us next week as we review our very first pro wrestling guerrilla show. We have gotten many requests to do a PWG show, so we are going to be reviewing this particular episode, this DVD, entitled Enchantment Under the Sea. This will feature the likes of Kevin Steen against Austin Aries, Joey Ryan against Chris Sabin for the PWG title, El Generico, the Briscoe Brothers, Brian Danielson against Claudio Castagnoli.
Whoa.
So certainly Davey Richards in the main event. Lots of characters that you're going to be familiar with. Now, if you want to buy this and watch the show, which might be your only easy way to do it, it is available for $7.99 on High Spots. I'm imagining we're not going to get a ton of feedback to this show. So if you, I think the best way to
Don't assume.
Well,
maybe this will break records.
Well, maybe
everybody will go to highspots.com.
Well, maybe. And if they get flooded with orders, I feel we're kind of responsible for that. So if you don't watch the show, maybe we can also make it, because Todd used to live right by Reseda, California, where they would do all their monthly shows, and they get rave reviews as a live experience. So maybe if you have any questions regarding PWG, we can take those questions, and between us and Todd, we can kind of do a little primer on Pro Wrestling Guerrilla for those that maybe aren't too familiar. Too familiar.
Yeah. I'm personally very much looking forward to this, because this is a promotion that I've not seen anything of, and it's one that I've always heard a lot about, so I'm interested. I'll be one of those people asking you a lot of questions.
Well, I think we'll be asking Todd as well. Todd is super up on Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, so I've been following it from afar. So that'll be next week's review. Should be a lot of fun, a bit of a detour from some of our usual reviews, so looking forward to that, and that is about all. The Law is up from Sunday night that I know Wei is going to download and listen, featuring Jim Cornette, Daniel Cormier giving his Royal Rumble thoughts.
Hell yeah.
And Dave Meltzer, of course. Review of Raw is up from Monday. And then all of our usual shows are up at liveaudiowrestling.com. We got 45 minutes with Jim Cornette that's going to be posted Thursday morning. So you can check that out. And Wei, you are going to be a special guest on What's Next, which is also coming up on Thursday this week, where I understand big singles about to drop.
We have a big surprise for you. Brayden and I, while Jason Agnew is away on business in America, Brayden and I are back here. I will be watching NXT. I will be on What's Next, but I will be watching NXT, so I'm completely new to it. But I mean, Brayden will catch me up. I'm very excited to watch that. Not only that, we are so excited, Brayden and I, to be doing the show together. We decided
to sing about it,
to do a rap song.
Sorry, rap about it.
Yeah, we don't sing.
I want a folk style version.
We actually, some of you may know, some of you have already heard Brayden's brilliant work on the NXT What's Next theme song. He's a brilliant hip hop mind, brilliant hip hop producer, and now it's about time for me to show off my lyrical prowess.
Oh, you feel threatened and you want to one up them.
Well, I mean, we're a team. We're a team. But I mean, yes, certainly there's some competition there. And so tune in. Tune in to What's Next. We will be dropping our new single, We the Law.
We the Law.
We the Law.
Is it We the Law or We the Law?
the
okay, TNT. You're not going to go too stereotypical.
No, we're not that cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, I can't wait. I'm very excited about hearing this rap song. Wei Ting will be a guest on What's Next, so that'll be up. You can also get all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for The Law Live Audio Wrestling. Leave us some feedback. We always appreciate that. And this Sunday night, a reminder, The Law moves back to 11 p.m. Eastern time. So that makes my life a lot easier. And this Sunday, we'll be chatting with Mick Foley, Dave Meltzer. Maybe we'll ask Mick Foley if he recalls that beach ball incident from the Sky Dome.
Oh.
And kicking it into the crowd in front of 38,000 people.
Yep.
So there you go. That's going to wrap things up. And as I look at this, that's going to be... Yeah, anyway, Sunday night. I was mistaken on something. Some music to go out with, Wei. Maybe a rap inspiration that when you were putting together this song, was there something? No?
No,
nothing,
not really.
Eh?
No.
Well, how about then we go out with... you know, I kind of like doing the timely rewinds.
Okay.
Maybe let's find out what the hot song of... February of 1999 was.
Sure.
The further we go back, the more silly the songs
are. Let me make a prediction.
Okay.
It must be something by the Backstreet Boys. What the fuck is that? The Boy Is Mine by Brandy and Monica.
Okay, I'm going back here to billboard.com. I'm going to predict...
What are you guessing? The number one single of 1999?
No. What was the number one single this particular week?
Nookie by Limp Bizkit.
Ooh, you know what?
I'm close.
What were your guesses?
Okay, let me think. Maybe like a...
Jesus, I look at some of these songs and I was like... I had most of these on my
Hard Knock
cassette.
Hard Knock Life by Jay-Z. No.
The number one song...
Crazy Town. Butterflies.
Crazy Town was not till, I believe, 2000. The number one song of February the 8th of 1999, Baby One More Time by Britney Spears.
Oh, shit.
Her initial breakout song.
That's a classic.
Which I recall back, it would have been right around this time. Because our school had gone on strike the prior September, we had to make up these days. So there were like three Saturdays I had to go to school, and they came on the PA right near the end of the day, and I was so depressed being in school 8:30 in the morning on a Saturday. And then at the end of the day, they said, everyone, we're going to let you all go home 20 minutes early, and you guys can all pack up your lockers to this song, and they played Baby One More Time.
What?
To an all-guys Catholic school. So we all were roaming the hallways to this particular song, and that's what I always think of with this song,
oh
is how weird it was with our, like, 60-year-old assistant principal, Mr. Clattenburg, announcing Britney Spears.
Yeah, how kind of weird, and how uncool. When your principal's playing you this song.
But how cool is it when you hear it at the end of a wrestling podcast?
Not cool at all, actually.
All right. Goodbye, everybody. Give Wei a follow. Tell him how great his song sounds. @Wei0937. And here's Britney taking us out.